Hey everybody, it's Shaman Sister Sin, and you're listening to the Meditations and More podcast brought to you by littleshaman.org. That's me, the Little Shaman. Today I wanted to talk to you about something that isn't always understood about dealing with narcissists, and that is that narcissists want to affect a sort of identity swap with the people around them. They want to absorb the perceived positive qualities of those around them and transfer their perceived negative qualities onto others in return. This doesn't appear to be a conscious endeavor per se, but that has no effect on how damaging it can be, so I thought we could talk about it on the show today. If you've heard the episode of the show entitled What People Actually Love About Narcissists, then you understand how narcissistic mirroring works. Narcissists can only experience themselves through the eyes of other people, and they live in a fantasy world besides. They have no real sense of identity, so they have to use external things to create one. This can unfortunately include the qualities, achievements, attitudes, beliefs, and anything else belonging to other people. Narcissists have a lot of difficulty differentiating themselves from external objects. This means that they can't really understand that the things around them are separate from them and exist independently of them. Kind of like the first time you ever saw your teacher outside of school as a kid and you realize, oh, she is a real person who exists in the world outside of your interactions with and your experiences of her. This is why narcissists assume that people see what they see, think what they think, believe what they believe, and on and on and on. It's very much like a child. External objects typically refers to people, but we can also often see this sort of over-identification with actual objects as well. Also with labels, words, dynamics. For example, many narcissists use external things like music, movies, a character on TV, a culture or a lifestyle, and many other things to create an identity. Now you might be thinking, well, you know, lots of people do that. Certainly, lots of people identify with certain things, but they don't build an identity around the things. The things are an expression of their identity and their personality, not the other way around. If they lost the thing or the person or the environment or whatever, they would still be who and what they are. They don't need that thing or that person or that whatever to create or to know who they are. For narcissists, we actually see often that their identity is literally tied into the thing. You could say in a way that their identity is the thing, and the thing is their identity. If they lose it, they often have extreme difficulty coping until they find another thing. It's just the way that this psychological structure works. They have to find things to fashion into an identity because they don't really have one. And they can't experience themselves except through the reflections in the eyes of other people. So they need the trappings and the props and the costumes and whatever else to make that look real. If it looks real, others will believe in it. If others believe in it, the narcissist can see it and believe in it. If the narcissist can see it and believe in it, then it is real. This is how narcissists create some semblance of identity and self-image. It's not true identity or self-image. It's more like an identity narrative. However, this makes it no less important to the personality structure. When people express disbelief in that identity narrative or they refuse to believe in it, this often provokes rage from the narcissist whose entire identity is actually being threatened and invalidated by the person's refusal to go along with and agree with their performance of that identity as real and true and authentic. It often causes them to feel as though they're being erased or that their identity is being taken away from them. As you can see, other people figure hugely in this sort of pseudo-identity creation process. It is perhaps not too extreme to say that it can't even happen without other people's participation. Narcissists cannot create anything of their own. They must take from others in order to have anything. They can't feel like they won unless somebody else lost. They can't feel like they're right unless somebody else is wrong. They can't feel like they're the good guy unless somebody else is the bad guy. They need that perception from others in order to make it real for them, and they can only see that perception through other people's observed reactions to them, to the narcissist. This means they spend their time constantly comparing themselves to other people to see who and what they themselves are and engineering situations where they can try to create the necessary reactions in people so that who and what they see is something that they can tolerate. For example, you're at the monthly family dinner and you share with everybody that you got a promotion at work. your narcissistic sister-in-law feels shamed by your share, because anytime anybody achieves anything, this shames narcissists because they feel that they're going to be seen as less than in comparison. Doesn't matter who it is, doesn't matter what it is. She now imagines that everyone is comparing her to you and is judging her as not as good as you, which is just a projection of what she herself is doing. In reality, no one but she is even thinking of her at all. And why would they be? The conversation has nothing to do with her. But for narcissists, everything is to and for and about and because of them. She might even imagine that you shared your good news on purpose, intending to make her look or feel bad, which then makes her feel attacked and angry on top of the shame. The fact that you would be sharing it for reasons that have nothing to do with her is not likely to be considered. It's doubtful she even thought of that. Everything is about her. Sometimes when people hear that, it doesn't really resonate with them how deep and fundamental this really is. Pathologically narcissistic people are not capable of seeing things a different way. They're not capable of understanding that people do things for their own reasons because they can't see that people exist outside of how that person relates to them. This means they can't really understand that people would have their own reasons. And if you listen to the things that they say, you will see that this is true. This is why you just being a person who exists and does things shames narcissists, because it really is all about them. Now, in order for a non-narcissistic person to combat that feeling of shame, if they even experienced it at all, they would internally remind themselves of all the things that they have achieved. They would remind themselves that someone else's success is not a reflection on them, etc., etc. They would self-soothe, in other words, using their own self-image and their own self-esteem and their own, like, self-stuff to regulate their emotions. Your hypothetical narcissistic sister-in-law cannot do this, though, because she has no self-stuff, which means she has nothing with which to combat the feeling of shame. She may, in fact, have real achievements that she could remind herself of, but since she has no self-stuff, since she emotionally owns nothing of her own and cannot see herself except through the eyes of others, this is not going to help her feel better. She must raise her perceived estimation in the eyes of everybody at the dinner table, which is to say in her own eyes, because the reality is they don't truly see anything through the eyes of other people. It's all projection. Since she can't actually raise herself up, that means lowering everyone's perceived perception of you. The only way she can address the situation is to diminish your promotion or you personally in some other way. That way, you are now less than her in everyone's eyes as she sees it. Now she feels better because now she's more as she sees it. The fact that none of this is true or real doesn't mean anything. Her feelings are all the proof and therefore all the truth that she needs. In a very real way, she has replaced her feelings of shame and powerless vulnerability with your feeling of accomplishment, transferring her shame to you. Now you feel bad and she feels good, which we may translate into just not bad. She has tried to take something from you and use it to fortify herself, attempting to transfer into you her own empty negativity. If you've ever seen the movie Invasion of the Body Snatchers, then you know that the plot of the movie is about alien life forms that came to Earth and assumed the form of human beings. They were sort of shapeless, inanimate beings until they were able to absorb and appropriate things from an actual person who was within their vicinity. Once they took what they could from that person, the person ceased to exist, leaving only the alien duplicate. The duplicates looked like the people physically. They were able to copy memories, traits, and personalities, but they were devoid of human emotion. As we discussed in the episode of the show called The Big Con, this is reminiscent of the Uncanny Valley Effect, which is the name given to the revulsion and negative reaction that we often see in people when robots or dolls look too much like people. We sometimes see it when people interact with psychopaths and narcissists too, and it appears to be for the same reason. It looks like a human being, but it doesn't feel like one somehow, and this creates a strong negative reaction in many people. It's theorized that this happens with things that are not human because instead of being identified as a robot who is poorly imitating a human, the robot appears so much like a human that the brain identifies the robot as a person who is not behaving naturally or correctly somehow. Following that logic, it becomes easy to see why this can happen with some narcissists and psychopaths too. Not surprisingly, the people in the movie could tell something was wrong. They insisted that the pod people who looked like their loved ones were duplicates or imposters of some kind, and so they were thought to be suffering from what are called Capgras delusions, which are delusions where people are able to physically recognize somebody that they know, but they don't emotionally recognize them. They don't have the emotional responses that humans have when they see familiar faces, so they believe them to be imposters that just look like their loved one or their friend. This can actually also happen with people's pets, too. In a very real sense, this is how narcissistic personalities operate as well. They are, in their own way, shapeless and inanimate without the input of other people, without others to mimic and to use to create some kind of identity out of, and without others, maybe the same others, maybe not, to reflect this performed identity back to them, there's really nothing to this person. They are like a blank TV screen waiting for somebody to power them up and pick a channel. They are, in many ways, a hodgepodge of characteristics and things they picked up from other people, from media, from books, and whatever else, and sort of like pasted onto themselves in an attempt to be someone instead of no one. Narcissists interact only with two-dimensional created images of others, and they see only two-dimensional created images of themselves. They are truly imposter human beings in this sense because there really is nothing there of any substance at all. They never get to know you. You never get to know them because there's nothing to know. The entire relationship is an illusion made up of what each person imagines the other person to be. And it stays that way because they cannot be real and they won't allow you to be real to them either. There's another parallel to Invasion of the Body Snatchers that might be less obvious to some people, because certainly the idea of duplicates that look and behave like human beings but have no emotions is a very clear and very obvious parallel regarding the experience of dealing with narcissists and psychopaths. Narcissists have emotions, of course. They're just often completely disconnected from them. But another parallel is that the people who were reporting that their loved ones were duplicates or imposters or otherwise like not normal human beings were deemed to be mentally ill in some way. Now, the situation presented in the movie is more dramatic, of course, and perhaps more understandable, but in so many situations, this is so similar to what happens to people who are dealing with narcissists. The situation is so incongruent to what other people can see, or so opposite of what other people can believe, that the victim is often told they're overreacting, they're imagining things, they're misunderstanding the situation, they're just wrong somehow about what's going on. This is very damaging and invalidating to victims of narcissistic abuse because they're already being gaslit so constantly from dealing with someone who is literally living in a different reality than they are. When they are also told by other people outside of that they must be wrong, this works to double down on the effect of the gaslighting that they are already receiving. The reality is, if people have not dealt with this, they genuinely do not understand. They might not see the things that you're talking about. They might not understand how these dynamics work. They may simply not be able to believe that this kind of thing really happens. Worse, if there's been any kind of smear campaigning or narrative control happening, they might believe some of the narcissist stories about how they've been victimized or mistreated by the victim. Unfortunately, this is extremely common. Along with attempting to take things from you and transfer things to you, this reversal of roles is another way of trying to perform the sort of invasion of the body snatcher's identity swap that narcissists endeavor to create. They're not the bad guy, you are. They are the victim or the good guy or whatever, not you. Narcissists cannot actually steal your identity in the sense that we're talking about. They can perform pieces of it, and they can try to force you to assume or at least carry limited pieces of their own, but that's it. They don't really know your identity anyway. They just know an idealized or devalued version of their interpretation of it. It's like a reflection of a reflection in terms of how removed it is from the genuine article. It also takes some degree of work to do that. They have to constantly offload, rebuild, offload, rebuild. Reversing the roles in the way that we're describing here works much faster, requires less effort, and is more satisfying in some ways because instead of having to rely on their own hopefully convincing performance as a solo, they have somebody else to play off of, and this always works much better for them. Because they have nothing of their own, narcissists aren't usually a very compelling solo act. They often come across to others as extreme, either too much or too little, cartoonish, stereotypical, or just off somehow with their performance of what we might call quote-unquote normal people. And that's because it is a performance, and even the most convincing performance is still just a performance. There are always going to be places where you can see through it if you actually look. The problem is most people don't, and really, why would they? Who goes around examining and studying others to try to see who all is pretending to be something that they're not? This is how narcissists get by with it, even though in many, many situations, the act is really not that good. It's just that people don't know it's an act. They just think this is a different kind of person, maybe a little bit awkward, maybe a little bit weird, and that's if they notice it consciously at all. Unconsciously, people usually do notice things, but if their conscious brain can't identify what it is, it just registers as an impression that something is off or different about this person, or as a vague sort of feeling that something's wrong. It's hard to know what that something is because really it's everything, but it's also nothing that can really be identified or pinpointed, at least at first. It's like listening to a very familiar song being played in a slightly wrong key, not necessarily an off key, just a wrong one. On one hand, it's totally wrong. On the other, it's exactly right. And because it's the whole song rather than just one or two off notes, it's harder to see what the problem is. The whole song is wrong, but at the same time, it's also right. All the words, instruments, structures, and formats are all there where they're supposed to be. This is the narcissist's solo performance, a familiar rendition played in the wrong key. However, when they have somebody else to play off of, somebody else to contrast and compare themselves to, it usually ends up better for them, at least at first. Over time, the narcissist's inability to keep time and play in key will usually be actually more noticeable when performing with others, not less. But at first, or in short bursts, they can seem to blend in very well. An act is still an act, and eventually theirs is seen through by most people. But in the short term, or just for the moment, they can do very well with this strategy, especially when people don't understand what's happening or don't know what they should be paying attention to in the situation. In the movie, the pods could only take somebody over when the person was asleep, meaning when they were unaware of what was going on. They could not be utilized when they were awake and aware of what was going on. This, too, is a striking parallel to dealing with antisocial mimics such as narcissists and psychopaths, as true prosocial assimilation, both of and into a society of other people, even of the limited superficial form that narcissists are trying to affect, is only possible when other people don't realize what's going on. If they are even somewhat aware, it fails. This doesn't mean that you can't be harmed by narcissists if you're aware of them, of course. They exist in real life. They are not physically bound by your belief in them the way a movie monster is, and they can definitely harm you. We've discussed many times how educating yourself about these dynamics is not enough to protect you, because it's not. It's like being in a room with poison gas. Knowing the gas is there does not make you capable of staying in the room and breathing in the gas. It does not protect you from the gas. It helps you to understand that in order to stop being poisoned, you have to get out of that room. This is the same thing. Knowing these things will not stop antisocial personalities from being able to harm you somehow if you interact with them. Nothing can stop that if they really want to do it and they're able to get to you. What it does mean is that you can't be forced to participate in the covert theft and resulting attempted erasure of your own identity when you are aware of what's going on. So I hope that clears a few things up for you. As always, I look forward to your comments, questions, and suggestions, so please keep those coming. I take appointments online, over the phone, via text, via Zoom, via Skype, and through email for clients worldwide. So if you're interested in speaking with me one-on-one, you can visit littleshaman.org to do that. I teach workshops, clinics, seminars throughout the year. So if you are interested in seeing what we're running this month, you can visit littleshaman.org to do that. If you're interested in joining our support group with access to exclusive content, weekly support meetings, and more, you can visit littleshaman.org to do that as well. You have been listening to the Meditations and More podcast brought to you by Transrelational Healing and littleshaman.org. That's me, Little Shaman. May the Great Spirit bless you. Have a beautiful day.